This is Heroin Addiction, presented by That Time I Got Reincarnated in the Same World as an Anime Podcaster, where two old nerds talk about media for high school girls. I'm Isekai Sensei Sama, aka Brad. As always, I'm joined by Bento Baggins, aka Ben.
Hello, I'm ready to take down all of my rivals for the affections of the male protagonist.
Yeah, so this week we are talking about Concubine Walkthrough. And this is a recommendation that comes to us from a comment on our website, animepodcasterreincarnation.com, from Rena. So shout out to Rena. Thanks for recommending this.
Yeah. Yeah, this was an interesting one. I don't think it's one you would have ever picked for yourself.
I will have to agree. And I will definitely get into that and some of the weirdness that I experienced with this. But first, the summary. At first, Yona gave some major side eye to the popular game Concubine Walkthrough until she got sucked into it. Literally. Now stuck as the villain, she has her hands full facing the infamously cruel king, shaking off scheming concubines and befriending NPCs. There's only one way the game master will let her out, and that's to become the queen. Will she be able to stay true to her honest and straightforward self despite the palace's intrigues? One extra problem, she's got competition.
I think, you know, I don't know about the romance games so much because I'm getting all my exposure to the romance games through these comics about them. So I don't know where they draw their, like, stories from. I don't know how involved the stories get. But the one interesting thing about this is, like, we read a lot of them. This is kind of probably segueing into a little more summary. We read a lot of them where the character is magically transported, like wakes up in an alternate reality, basically. And this one, it's like a dot hack sign setup or a Sword Art Online for people who are not as old as me. where they're stuck in VR.
Log Horizon.
I like that one, actually. Then he got busted for tax evasion, and now it'll never be finished.
But yeah, that also stuck out to me a lot because in a lot of these different series that we're looking at, it's either a novel and she gets transported or she's reincarnated. But like most of it, there is some magical element that she is now reliving the life, got transported from Korea, whatever it is. But it's like, it is real. Even if she's like, oh, I read this in a novel. Well, and of course there's the very prevalent trope nowadays of, oh, I read this in a novel. Oh, it turns out that I'm the original person and my time in Korea was the fake thing. And now I'm back where I'm supposed to be. But yeah, in this, they are very clearly sticking to this is a game the whole way. There was even one part I remember where they alluded to, like, what if it's not a game? But then they very clearly steer it back and like, no, it's definitely a game. This is AI. It's being weird. Like,
it has a menu. But
yeah.
The reason I brought that up is because it changes the way the characters interact with the world a little bit.
Yeah.
Because when you're transported like bodily into another reality, you behave differently. Like the romance unfolds a lot differently. There's awkwardness and resistance to it. Whereas this one, they're playing a game, but they're in VR and they're all rushing to the end where ostensibly the end is, you know, you shtup the emperor. Like I kind of,
all right,
wonder...
I'm going to spoil a little bit for you. Cause this is really interesting. I literally just read this chapter before we started recording. So, quick bit of background. Our main character, Yona Lee, gets put in the body of the villain of this story and then goes about trying to clear the story as the villain. Comes to find out there are other players in this game. And there is some question as to who those players are, but it turns out that the main protagonist of the original story, Lily, is also a player. And after some time, they come to find that they're both players and they form an alliance. Although we will come back to that. But this chapter that I just read, Lily was summoned by the Emperor. Now, the important point there is that Lily is actually a boy in real life. And so he's freaking out because originally the game is supposed to skip the nighttime scenes.
Yeah.
But when Yona spent the night with the Emperor earlier and nothing happened, it didn't get skipped. And so he's freaking out about like what's going to happen here. And actually, it was actually a really good chapter because it showed that like the whole reason he's playing this game is because like us, he enjoys these romance things and these Otomo games and everything. A little unlike us, but it shows that earlier on in his life, he was sort of like, I'm not sure what the exact term was for it, but maybe gender fluid. Mm-hmm. Not quite gender fluid, but like he liked dolls and he liked putting pins in his hair. So even though he's a straight male,
he's got non-conforming,
this. Right. Yeah. And so there's this question of like, is this okay? Like what's going to happen here?
It makes me wonder, like, there probably is. I don't even know what I'm saying. I was going to say, as far as I know, there's no like VR dating sims, but of course there are. yeah, of course there are. And I'm just like, I would think if you're playing one of those, you're not playing it for the same reason you play the cell phone version. Maybe. I don't know. The closest I get to this is Fire Emblem. I play Fire Emblem.
We should point out that this story takes place in 2035. So, like, real life in 2035, like our Earth, but in the future, where VR technology and AI technology has progressed. So they have, like, the full neural interface.
Yeah, they're essentially for VR. Like lucid dreaming this. Yeah.
And then for the characters, the NPCs, they're using actual artificial intelligence to make it realistic. And so I think it's really different from what we have today. And it makes more sense to me coming from that perspective of like the way that they play the games in the future has evolved beyond what we are at today. So realistically, this game is the E-rated version and you can pay more to get the adult version, but the E-rated version is the normal one, but the game is bugged. They're trapped in this game. And so turns out it's not the E-rated version. It's the no rated version because it's like real life.
Yeah, I did get a kick. I knew this was a thing, but I'd forgotten it or it faded to the back of my mind where Korea actually cuts off minors playing online.
Yeah, I
games.
Believe 10 p.m.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so she was thinking initially like, oh, I'll get out of this when they cut me off at 10 p.m. because she is a high schooler studying for her college entrance exams. And that was just another weird one where I'm always like, I'm so used to like doing the anime podcast where I have all of this knowledge about Japan accumulated over the years and like I study the language and then I keep getting, it's so refreshing to be like thrust back into the, I don't know anything about this, but the second thing,
stepping right outside of your comfort zone.
Yeah. The second thing is, the multiplayer romance game, like that changes everything for me.
Yeah. But again, I think like it makes more sense if it's a, you know, rated E for everyone game, that it would be like, oh, multiplayer and you're going to like compete against each other. But I think the point is sort of like having an awareness that it's multiplayer. Because at the start of the game, they all think that it's single player. They're the only one. And then that once they find out or rather they get suspicious because these other characters aren't acting like they expected.
Yeah.
And they, at first they hand wave it away as like, oh, this artificial intelligence is like really good. They're going so far beyond, you know, like the norms that you would expect, and then find out like, oh, right. This is the multiplayer version.
So that for me was kind of the hook. I don't know. That's where like this one distinguished itself from everything else. Because while Yona Lee is the protagonist, you also spend a lot of time with the other characters, and it's not the usual like, oh, I wonder why they're acting so strange, or you know, it's not like they're not just thinking about Yona Lee. They're doing their own things. They're having their own strategies.
Yeah, all of the characters have agency.
Yeah. Well, and they all have the, I guess, isekai knowledge of the other world. So like,
to an extent, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. That kind of blew my mind. I haven't read anything like that before. You're the isekai sensei-sama. I don't know if you have.
So, I mean, there's definitely other series that have done the, this is definitely a game the whole time, and we're sticking to that. And most of the time, those are, the manga that I read like that are very low stakes. Except for, there are certain ones, like your Sword Art Online, where the stakes have to be raised, and so they have to introduce some complication into it. Now, Sword Art Online, it was, hey, guess what? You die in the game, you die in real life now. Deal with that. I mean, and that's what most of them do. In this instance, there's no indication that if they die, they will die in real life, but they are unable to log out. They are unable to get a message out to say help or anything. And so there's this question of like, what are we going to do? We're stuck in here.
Well, there's definitely, early on, she jumps into the river to try to drown herself.
Mm.
And it doesn't log her out. I think there's supposed to be some restriction in the hardware that if they experience like traumatic stress,
right,
it should auto log them out, and it doesn't stop her. And so she's rescued from drowning, but she doesn't really know what would happen. And I don't think she wants to risk it again, because even if you wouldn't die in real life, you'll certainly be able to experience the pain of death.
So did you not get that far then?
Probably not. How, okay. Did somebody die?
Someone died, and everyone went back 6 hours.
Oh, no, I didn't get that far.
Yeah. So all of the players all of the players experienced it and then found themselves in the past. And so that was a very key moment, because they were able to do things differently and get a better outcome because of that.
So
that was actually a catalyst to find an additional player that they didn't know was a player at the time.
How many players are there at this point?
As far as we're aware, so we should probably be clear on this. I am currently on chapter 69. Nice. And you said you were in the 50s somewhere.
I think I was just at 50.
So you're probably like right before this happens.
Yeah. And my memory is a little fuzzy.
Actually, you definitely should have.
Yeah.
Passed this point. So this was when Ranhi was being accused of the infidelity that the Empress was originally accused of.
Okay.
And they were arrested and being taken to the Empress's palace, or the previous Empress's. She's like the deposed Empress, and she's in the cold palace is what they call it. I'm not entirely sure. That must just be like, oh, let's stick her in the freezer. But then they're like, oh, wait, they're not actually taking us to the cold palace. It's a trap. And then, the guard sacrifices himself to stop the assassination. You remember that now?
Yes. Okay.
Spoilers, by the way.
I was going to say, I kind of remember. I remember some of the players, but I don't remember others.
Yeah. So
I've had to read so
they figure out that he's another player, but he, so it's important to note that both, Yona and Lili don't remember how they got into the game in the first place. They are aware that they were going to play it, and then, like, now they're stuck there. The guard, whose name is Yongjong, doesn't remember that he's a player at all.
Yeah.
He is completely immersed, and they have to, like, show him that he's a player by the fact that he is able to access the menu and all that. And so over time, he, like, slowly starts to regain his memories. It's really interesting. And I think this was really strange for me because when I started reading this, I read the first five chapters a couple weeks ago, not long after we recorded the previous episode. And I read those chapters and I thought to myself, this is objectively good in many, many ways. And then for some reason, I didn't read it again for a while. And then a little while later, I read five more chapters. And again, I said to myself, this is objectively good. And yet I didn't go back to it.
It's just not scratching the itch.
And it wasn't until a couple days ago when I was like, I have to read this because we're going to record soon and I need to be able to talk about it. So I started reading it more purposefully. And I'd say it wasn't until like chapter in the 20s somewhere that I went, oh, this has got me now. And so in like yesterday and today, I read like 40 chapters.
Yeah. You know what? When you put it that way, it makes a lot of sense because I was interested like analytically in what they were doing because there's a lot of cool stuff being set up that kind of distinguishes itself from other things in the genre, the multiplayer, the VR, the characters' motivations are a little bit different. Yona Lee is, I think, the youngest protagonist we've had in terms of like at the point of isekai. Like she
potentially, at least from the series we've done so far.
Yeah. And so her motivation is to get back, which is something I always like in isekai, when it's not just a objective good. But that being said, most of the cool stuff is set up and then kind of ignored. And I remember reading a lot of the comments on the chapters and being like, oh, I love Yona Lee so much. I love her reactions. She's so funny and strong and cool. And I just remember thinking like, that chapter was treading water. That chapter was treading water. Like I don't feel like the first 20 or so really moved the plot along that much. It was a lot of Yona Lee being resistant to her situation and pointlessly trying to get out of it. And I knew it was pointless. Like I knew all the things she was trying to do to like quickly end the game weren't going to work or log out of the game weren't going to work. And I wasn't very interested in those things. I went as quick as I could.
It's interesting because, you know, you seem to have somewhat of a clear picture of what wasn't grabbing you. But I didn't have any thoughts like that. And thinking back on it, I can't really put my finger on what exactly it was, the reason why it didn't grab me.
I'm doing a bad job of describing it because this isn't the only series that I don't want to say wastes time, but this isn't the only series that takes long detours that aren't relevant to the main plot.
Mm-hmm.
But for whatever reason, Yona Lee as a protagonist, her detours are a little more frustrating. And I think it's because like there were a lot of times with her more than other protagonists where I'm like, with the information available to you right now, you should know more than you do. You should be making a different decision.
Mm.
And the comedy of it was why they don't. She's got to be a little quirky and wacky and overhyped. But I don't know. It didn't bother me as much as you. So that probably isn't your issue. And I know certainly you read a lot more, shall we say, fluff than I do.
Yeah.
But I it was a little fluffy. Now, the thing that saved this for me is I absolutely love the art.
That's definitely a thing.
I know that never saves it for you.
Yeah, the art. I mean, there's definitely art in certain series that is just terrible, and it really drags the whole thing down. This, they have a very interesting style, with the way that they are sort of matching the classical Chinese tapestry kind of style and colors and everything.
There, I mentioned this when we said we were going to be doing this. There's an artist I really like in Japan named Yusuke Nakamura. And this is the closest other example to the style I can think of. He does a lot of like thin lines, flat colors, patterns, and it looks a little bit like the old traditional paintings. Mm. And that's what this looked like to me. Now, the artist goes a little more anime, like a little more cartoony with it than Nakamura does. But there are times, and I always think this is neat, where the old wall scrolls, you know how they have like an almost like bean-shaped face sometimes?
Mm-hmm.
They do that. There's times when she's supposed to be like super pretty, and they just make her face like a little more like an old style, like bean-shaped face. Mm-hmm. And her makeup is very, you know, traditional, old, like very formal Chinese. She's got all the hand ornaments because she's, you know, a delicate flower is not supposed to touch anything.
Right.
like her whole body is painted, so you could tell if she it's smeared anywhere, if she was touched. And I liked all of that stuff, as much as they say it's not based on any Chinese.
So for me, there were two things. So the reason I kept pushing forward, the first one being everyone in the comments, in the ratings, everybody's talking about this is great. And the second part sort of plays into that, which was, as I read the first 10, 15 chapters, I could very clearly, I could rationally and objectively see that it is good. The way the story was playing out, the way the art is done, like everything was competent and good. It was done well. And so I was like, I have to push through this, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm really glad I did, because, yeah, as I said, once I got into the 20s somewhere, it just went, this is what it is now, and we're going to move forward. And there, something jumped out at me and went, you like this, by the way. And I was like, yeah, you know what? I really like this. I'm going to keep reading this.
For me, I still to this moment in the series do not really relate to Yona Lee.
Oh, certainly. There's a very clear, so I like her as a protagonist. She's a strong female lead, but very clearly not perfect, which is, I feel like she's realistically portrayed for a high school girl.
That's what I was going to say. There's a certain immaturity to her that's believable as a high school kid.
Yeah. And they make it clear, like she has the ability to be intelligent and put on a show, you know, act the part and everything. She has the ability to deduce things and, you know, set things up and everything. And of course, later on, she gets help with those. But like, even early on, it shows that she is capable, but also she's got plenty of times where she's clumsy, where she lets her guard down when she shouldn't, where she misses important information. And I think the way that they did that, it none of it feels out of place or contrived.
No. And where it's overemphasized, it's done for comedy and it fits the tone.
Yeah.
I kind of started getting into it when, I don't know how, this is an early spoiler, I guess, but this is a spoiler. You revealed that Sunshine is more than he seems, I guess.
Right. So Sunshine is at first what we think the eunuch that rescues her when she jumps in the water. And this weird eunuch keeps showing up and like wanting to be friends with her and keeps making really awkward situations because she's trying to hide the fact because she's the emperor's top concubine. She can't be seen with another man until we come to find out. And she finds out much later, but we find out that that's actually the emperor. They say in disguise, but really it's lack of disguise.
He's shaved his mustache.
You're right. And so most people don't recognize him because he doesn't have the mustache. And I think beard that he used to have. And he's been making his one eunuch who looks somewhat similar to him pretend to be him on the throne while he goes out gallivanting.
Yeah, but he's dark too. That's what it wasn't just that he was in disguise. It's that when he's Sunshine, he's this playful idiot. And then when he flips the mask and goes back to being the emperor, he's very dark, very controlling, very powerful, intimidating. And I think where I started to get into it was when he had that initial conversation with the Empress Dowager, his mother, who is, you know, they're trying to push him to have a son. That's kind of like the whole moral justification for the concubine system is that the emperor needs to be able to produce heirs.
Yeah. Maybe you don't need 30 concubines for that, but you know,
in a lavish city in which to keep them and you know, and you certainly don't have to like kidnap them from their families or,
right,
or punish families who resist you. But yeah, it reminded me, this might be like too high a praise, I'm not sure, but it reminded me of like the early seasons of Game of Thrones where Cersei is talking to Joffrey or Tyrion. And the Empress Dowager is not like as menacing as Cersei was in the Game of Thrones show or the books, but there's a little bit of that. There's a little bit of that kind of political intrigue. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people who want to claim that Empress spot. And the Emperor doesn't seem to be interested in them. And like in the lore of the game up until this point, Yona's character, what is her official title?
Imperial Consort.
Yeah. The Noble Imperial Consort. That is his favorite consort. That is the only consort he sleeps with. And she has proven to be infertile. And for some reason that doesn't bother him. And it deeply bothers his government.
Yeah.
Which, you know, back in those days of, you know, whatever imaginary kingdom this might have been inspired by, you know, if you didn't have an heir, if the line of succession was unclear, that was a war. So there's a good reason a lot of people want him to have an heir, and he doesn't give a shit.
Yeah. So the emperor, I don't like the emperor.
I don't like him.
But he is a very good character.
Yeah. I find him a compelling villain, question mark?
Yeah, it's like I would say antagonist.
Yeah. 'Cause
he's not necessarily a villain. He might be, but he's not necessarily. And they give you that sort of like moral gray area where it's like they show some things that have happened in the past that might make, you know, the fact that he does some tyrant-like things, maybe more justifiable. But then they sort of go back and they're like, maybe not. And like, oh, maybe Yona is changing him, but is she really? Maybe she isn't. Like, what's going on? And so the way that the character, and I can't even really say the character grows, because he might not have changed in these 60 some odd chapters that I've read.
Yeah.
But there's the hint of, well, maybe he did. Do you know that he didn't?
What confuses me about him, or especially early on, is his affection for the noble imperial consort seems to be genuine.
Right.
But he's so shady in how he goes about it, and he's so manipulative to everybody else.
Yeah.
That you're like, what is this guy? What's he doing?
And I can tell you, in the next couple chapters, it gets worse. So, yeah,
I know, I could believe that there's a real darkness to the sunshine.
There's a lot of characters that play very important roles, but not necessarily for very long. Touched on the Empress Dowager. There's a whole plot that has to do with the previous Empress and the Empress Dowager trying to reinstate the previous Empress and gain control over the Emperor and potentially rule herself. There's the second ranked concubine. I believe Yang is her name. She is the mother of the only princess, the only child of the Emperor. Although there is a little bit of a question, is the princess the actual child of the Emperor? Like, they sort of waffle on that. I think she actually is, but there's still a question. And so there's a plot with that consort and the princess, and there's all these characters that will come in and out, play important roles, and then maybe sort of like be off to the side. Maybe they'll come back later, that kind of thing. I think the characterizations in this series are really well done just overall. There's almost always a good motivation for the characters doing what they're doing.
I agree with that. I think some of the stuff some of the stuff that kept me going was in the script of the game, the Imperial Noble Consort is supposed to be just an intolerable tyrant who treats everybody horribly. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like the normal shift with these villainous ones, her body is now inhabited by a person who's not a psychopath. And they don't treat people horrible. And by not treating people horribly, they make allies. And so when Yonali sort of makes friends with her staff, I especially like the one that headbutt the guard.
Yeah.
Can't remember. Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, I can't remember her name, but yeah, she was my favorite. I loved the headbutt scene. That was the first time the comedy actually got a chuckle out of me. Was when he had to like block it with his head.
Right, because she was trying to protect Yona because this strange man, Sunshine, is in her room.
Yeah.
Not knowing that that's actually the Emperor. Nobody, except for the guard, knew that it was the Emperor. And so he had to jump in and stop it, lest the Emperor be attacked. Which it turns out wouldn't have been a big deal because the Emperor is actually like really strong.
Yeah, he's jacked. Yeah. He looks off that robe. But no, it made me laugh. I was like, because also, she, you know, ignore the implications of the 10-year-old girl in the city of concubines. But
which one was 10?
Well, Mona, I guess. I mean, she seems very young.
Oh, she's, I don't think she's that young.
She's like two heads shorter than everybody else.
She's definitely younger, but I don't think she's 10.
Well, I was just ignoring it the way I ignored it in Demon Slayer. I was like, you know, nobody else seems bothered by this. Probably should, but they're not. So.
Stay tuned to the next episode.
But yeah, I just she was a cute character. I liked it. I liked a lot of the side characters. Every like, I don't know, maybe that's sort of the dopamine hit that keeps me coming back to these villainous ones, where it's like, it's just really nice to see them get like a loyal ally.
Yeah. Cause as far as
I was going to say, I think back to like the maid from, I think it's Villains Are Destined to Die. Is that the one?
That was the last one we did.
Yeah. Or she gets that maid who fed her bad food at the beginning, and then by the end, she would die for her. Yeah. I don't know. For some reason, that is like a weird dopamine hit. It works for me every time they do it, no matter how many times I see it.
As far as dopamine hits go, I think very clearly the thing that got me was that sort of in these later chapters, they started doing cliffhangers really well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, where it's like you get to the end and you're like, oh, I have to read the next one. Because, yeah, they really get you. They're like, here's this dramatic thing right at the end, and it's over. Guess what? Now you have to wait. Except I don't, because they're already out. So I get to just keep hitting that next button.
No, I like that. I would go so far as to say, you know, I complain about it detouring, but maybe what I mean to say is slow burn.
Yeah.
It eventually gets there. And in terms of like chapter count, it gets there pretty quick.
Yeah. It had all of the pieces at the beginning, but maybe they just weren't in the right configuration to hook me.
Whatever it was, like when she's doing the initial tests, when she's giving them like the math problems and the riddles and the like, because the Imperial Noble Consort is supposed to be evaluating all of the candidate consorts to see if they deserve to get into the palace.
Right.
And that whole testing process, it didn't do anything for me. It was silly.
It was during that arc, I guess I'll say arc, that something grabbed me. At the beginning of it, it wasn't there, and by the start of the investigation arc, which is sort of in the middle of that, it had grabbed me by then.
One of the wow moments for me was when they have the tea party for like the second test, and Lili is like, oh, well, the Imperial Noble Consort isn't acting right. And up until this point, Lili is like gung-ho about winning the game and, you know, getting rid of the Imperial Noble Consort, because that's what you got to do to win the game. And she thinks like, well, maybe I could make an ally of the Imperial Noble Consort. And I was like, now it's getting there. It's getting... I don't know why I like the ally thing so much. I'm learning this about myself right now. But that's what I want to see. I want to see them like have more interactions together that aren't purely antagonistic.
Yeah. So speaking of that, I need to get this out there. I don't like Lili.
I don't like Lili either.
So when they first learn that they're both players, and Yona is like freaking out because she's trapped in this game. She's like, you got to help me get out of here. And Lili, fully knowing that this is another living, breathing person who is trapped in this game, goes, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to continue to play this game and I'm going to beat you.
I can't remember. Can Lili log out? Can any of them log out?
So we find out later that Lili can't log out. And she actually found that out right before she found out that there's another player in the game. But frankly, I can't forgive him. Like, that's such a dick move. And so even though now they've moved on and are friends and allies mostly, and are like trying to work together to figure out how to finish the game and get out, that initial interaction, I just can't get past that.
I will tell you what bothered me about Lili. once you know that it's a real person, the way the player plays the character of Lily reminded me of like every number crunching power gamer I have ever had at my D&D table.
Mm.
And often it is exactly like it is. It plays out in this story where there's one person who is just taking this way more seriously than everybody else.
But that's the thing, is he's also not taking it seriously. Like, the game is more important to him than the health and well-being of another person.
No, that's what I mean about the D&D people. Like, you gotta build the perfect character. And like, I've had groups fall apart because people, and I don't mean to, you know, just because you like to build an effective character in D&D doesn't mean you're a bad person, obviously. But the few people I've had who are like really obsessed with the numbers, really obsessed with doing the most damage, when they don't, or when something doesn't go their way, they get mad at the other players. Like, it's rude to them to suck at D&D.
Yeah. But also, I feel like pretty much all of those situations are not potentially life and death.
True. True.
And I say mostly all. I'm sure it has happened.
there's been at least one death at a D&D table.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I get it. I don't know. The internal logic of that is a little weird.
Yeah.
Because at the same time, I could think, like, you know, only one of them can win, right?
Right. But again, like, Yona doesn't care about winning. She only wants to win to get out of the game. Like, if there's another way to get out, she will take that way.
If the game,
because she doesn't even want to be there.
Yeah.
As far as we know, she just wanted to try it out a little bit and then go back to studying to get into college, because she's even in the game, she is studying to get into college. However that works.
At any
they don't point, quite explain that.
Do you get the sense of like how much time has passed? Is there any?
Honestly, I don't know. And at this point, if it's anywhere close to real time, because she keeps talking about like, I only have 100 days until the entrance exam or whatever. And then she's like counting it down. If this is real time, how is she still alive? Because it's already been weeks. Like, does the VR thing have a built-in like IV that like keeps you alive and, and pumps nutrients into you and like stimulates your muscles or whatever?
I don't know. Well, that was Sword Art Online, right? They were in a hospital with like a catheter and an IV.
Well, by the end, they didn't start out that way. Once they found out that people were stuck in the game, they went around and collected them and took them to the hospital.
Yeah.
As far as we know, Yona is like in her apartment with this thing on.
Well, she's not dead. So either somebody's taking care of her or the passage of time is different in the game.
Yeah. I can't point to a clear indication one way or the other. It's leaning more towards real time as far as information we have.
Is this series over?
I think don't think so.
Oh, okay. Well, it's been going for years then.
Yeah, 112 chapters are out. Or rather, chapter 112 comes out in 3 days.
Okay, that's less than I thought.
Yeah, so still ongoing. And yeah, it's been, oh my God, years. It's been going on for years.
I remember when I opened the first chapter, it was like, this was uploaded like 700 days ago. And I was like, holy shit. Well, I guess my next question is, so then it sounds like it has made it into your list, your ever-growing list.
Yes, I'm definitely going to continue reading this. I'm going to catch up to where it is, and then I'm going to continue reading it as it comes out. I wouldn't say, you know, I don't know that if this is at the top of my list, but it's definitely top 50% at least.
It's different. It is different than what we were reading.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's almost a different genre. Like, it is a villainous isekai kind of thing, but it's very different in tone.
There's definitely other series that have given me a similar feeling to this one, but that's just the feeling I get and not necessarily like the story and the art and all of that. Like they're definitely doing a lot of things differently and they're doing those things well.
It's not as like blatantly romantic.
Right. Yeah. The romance stuff that they put in there is more like sort of an aside. A lot of it is coming from the Emperor, and when it comes from Yona, they very clearly go like, this is just my hormones as a teenage girl talking.
She's very much like, oh, he's hot.
Yeah.
But it's not, it's an attraction. It's not necessarily going to, it's not like the other ones where you want them to get together and like, oh my God, they hugged. Like,
right. Right.
Yeah. So yeah, it's almost, I don't know. There's probably somebody has probably defined like a million subgenres of this subgenre, but this has a different vibe to it.
Mm-hmm. And I like it.
No, I like it. It was a good pick. It gets some variety in the show.
Yeah. I gotta say, like, I mean, as I said, it didn't grab me at first and I was a little worried. I didn't, after everybody hyping it up, getting it recommended by a fan, I didn't want to get into it and be like,
I'm you didn't not want really this to be it. The first comic ever that you didn't like.
Yeah. So I'm glad I pushed through it. There's others that I didn't like, but the ones that I have not liked that I have not like followed or anything are objectively bad. And this one was objectively good. Mm-hmm. And yet it didn't grab me there in the beginning. So, I mean, if there's any takeaway for anyone listening to this thinking like, oh, should I read this or not? Read at least the first 25 chapters. And I know that's quite a commitment to make, but if you look at the reviews from other people, it's probably worth it.
If this were, I don't know, I guess they do animate these sometimes. I was going to say, if this were a traditionally published comic, I could see this getting an anime. I could see this almost having a bigger audience, though maybe I'm wrong because I don't know how popular this is because the stats I'm looking at are probably not legitimate.
I think I'd have to agree with you. I think that this might be one that would get picked up like that.
Because there's a depth of story here that some of the other ones haven't had. Like some of the other ones are very much like I describe them like soap opera. They're very like high drama, dopamine rush, serotonin flow. Like they just push all the buttons and then they get out. And there's not like a real depth of plot or anything that's going on. It's just getting you from one of those moments to the next.
Mm.
Whereas this one, a little bit of mystery. I don't have a ship right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I like that guard guy, but that was like implanted memories. So
it's my ship for this is they get out.
Yeah, really. Like it's a romance game where there's no romance plot. So
yeah.
Yeah, this is honestly, this is up there for me with like Dot Hack Sign more than it is with any of the other romance ones. I don't know if that's a selling point, but like I would recommend this to a whole different crowd of people. Like I would recommend this to people I would recommend Dot Hack Sign to.
Maybe
there's not as much action,
but yeah.
If you're there for the action. But I would say, honestly, even in a show like Dot Hack Sign, maybe Sword Art Online less so. That's more overtly about the fighty bits.
Right. But. Yeah. So, yeah, overall, I think it's very good. Especially getting further into it, a lot of the mystery, the intrigue, the sort of like problem solving and a bit of a romance really grows a lot once you get further into it. So,
yeah.
One note that I needed to bring up here. This is actually the first note that I wrote. The name of the high school that she goes to.
Oh, I don't remember.
It jumped out to me because it's Bong Bong High School.
Yep. That's a good, Mob Psycho style name.
Well, Bong Bong is the artist.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Artist and author, I believe. Yes. Written and drawn by Bong Bong.
Now, is this another based on a novel?
I don't think it is.
Oh my God. That might be, that would be a first, I think.
I don't think this is a novel.
Oh my God. You know, I actually like it even more for that. In all honesty, if this is the creation of one person, written and drawn, because I do think the art is on its own very good. And the story on its own is of like a pretty high caliber. Talented person.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd have to agree. I think they did a good job. I'm looking here to see. They do have some other series, two right now. This one is over, this first one. Surviving as the Prince's Fiancé. That was only 80 chapters long. Let me see here. Oh, not well rated at all, unfortunately. although that doesn't always mean anything. These communities can be a little bit fickle.
I tell you what, if they're a one-hit wonder, then that's one more than me.
Oh, this is interesting. So that series, Bong Bong was only an author, and there's a different artist. But Bong Bong, if you're listening, we think you did a good job with Concubine Walkthrough. So
I would definitely agree. This is one where I'm not a big spoiler baby. I don't often think spoilers are like ruinous of the enjoyment of a thing, but in this case I think it is better read. There's a lot of like little mysteries and things that'll
and we've spoiled a couple things here, but I don't think any of it was none of it will ruin the story.
Yeah
you're not gonna think back to what we said and go, oh wait, now I know that this is this thing. Like, besides the fact that you'll know that that's the Emperor right away. But the reader finds out that's the Emperor pretty quickly. It's so like the within next like chapter. Yeah, it's like two or three chapters. So, all right. So time to rate. So, Ben, what do you think I am going to rate this at out of 10?
Oh, I don't really know because you've been so up and down on it. 7 or 8.
Yeah, I'm going to give this a solid 7. So I think there's a possibility that this will go up to an 8 as I get further in. But as it is right now, I'm putting it at a 7. And I do have to say, the fact that it didn't grab me right away is a detriment. Now, it doesn't that doesn't mean it's bad or anything, but for something to get up into the 9 and 10 range for me, it's got to grab me right away. So
this is one where I would need to rate it again when it ends.
Yeah.
Because
it seems to be happening a lot lately.
Well, this one especially because it is so heavy on the mystery. Like the other ones, it's like, yeah, I want to see the payoff of the romance. But this one, it's like if they don't stick the landing of them getting out of this game, then retroactively the whole thing is worse.
Yeah.
So this is one where it could go up or down. The other ones, I think, I mostly thought they could go up. But if they, you know, wake up and it was all a dream or something, then I'm going to be mad. But right now for me, I'd say it's an 8.
Okay.
Going a little higher.
Is this the first one you've rated higher than me?
It probably is. Mm. And I think it's for a weird, like, art. Love the art. I mean, I'm really biased to that style, but there's so many little things going on with the art. So many references to, like, classical styles and fashion and all that stuff. And it makes me laugh. And they do, like, even I go back to the headbutt thing because it was so anime. She shouts out the name of her move. And then there's like this whole blocking where he's like, it's panels, but like I saw it happen in slow motion. I really like what they're doing.
Yeah. And
it's better than it needs to be. They went above and beyond for that.
Yeah.
Cause I know this takes time and these people probably get paid by the chapter, you know, like,
yeah, I don't know what the, pay structure is, but yeah, I can't imagine it's like all that lucrative.
You're not getting paid if you don't deliver, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So taking the extra time to do that, I appreciate it.
So question for you before we pick our next series that we'll do next time and wrap this up. I have a feeling, and I wonder what you think. Do you think we should recommend this to Kermit?
Oh, he's a tough one.
Yeah. Especially for, like, the manhwa is so far outside of his normal purview.
I don't know. It'd be,
I feel like this would be the one.
You know, I think I'd be interested in his take on it either way. But the danger here is, like you say, it didn't grab me right away.
Yeah.
With Kermit.
Yeah, yeah.
A first impression is everything.
That's true. But you said that the thing that grabbed you was the art right away.
Yeah, and
he's very similar in that true. In that regard.
I'd be interested in seeing what he says about it. This will be an experiment.
Yeah, we let's not bring it up. We know he listens to these, so
yeah, we'll see if
he'll hear this, and then we'll see what happens.
Okay.
And once again, thanks to Rena for giving us this recommendation. Unfortunately, we did not get any more recommendations since then or any comments at all. So
it was the holidays. I'll give him a slight break for that. But you know what? It's over. It's time to get back into the gym. It's time to get recommended me romance comics. So let's go.
So I believe we've discussed a couple times about series being finished or not.
Yes.
And you expressed interest in reading one that's finished.
Yes.
So I have one that I think would probably be a good one. And it actually just wrapped up 31 days ago. The last epilogue came out.
Oh boy. I'm going to the website. What is it?
The Villainous Turns the Hourglass.
I've got it. I got it added. Oh, this isn't even like super duper long. Okay.
No, it's not. It's not crazy. What are we at? So besides the epilogue, there's 104 chapters. Main story is 104 chapters. I have a feeling that once you get a couple chapters in, you will burn through it.
Oh.
It is very compelling.
Okay, I'm interested. I think I mentioned this on the last one, but I started reading these on my phone. Like I'm in deep now. Like I've got an account. I've got the follow list. I've got them like grouped into like little folders.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've drank the Kool-Aid. I'm I'm into it now.
This one is very close to the top of the list. So I think this is one that you'll enjoy.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so there you have it. We're going to, next time, we'll be checking out The Villainous Turns the Hourglass. So if you want to read along before we release the episode, that's the one. And so, as always, you can let us know what you think on social media and tell us if you have a series that you want us to cover. As I said, Concubine Walkthrough was recommended to us and we did it immediately. That's how desperate we are for attention.
He's not wrong.
Be sure to check out the regular podcast. That time I got reincarnated in the same world as an anime podcaster. Those come out opposite of this. And there will be a new episode in just a couple weeks here. In addition, we've now started to release, our prequel podcast episodes, Pop Culture Talk Zone. And the first episode of that came out recently, so be sure to check that out as well. You can check out our website, animepodcasterreincarnation.com. It's a good place to leave comments on the podcast episodes, and we also have other posts and reviews. In fact, there's a new article out there that I just saw today that I need to read.
Oh, yes. See, you know how like we secretly recommend things to Kermit? I secretly sometimes write articles just to see if anybody's paying attention.
We also have Patreon. So if you want to just, you know, let us know that you like what we're doing, you can go out and find us on Patreon, search for Anime Podcaster Reincarnation, and give us a dollar or two just to show us some support. You can also hit us up on Twitter. I'm at Isekai Sensei, and I suppose for the time being, Ben is at Benbo's Wagons. Yep. Or do you still look at it every once in a while?
Oh, I still look at it, but like I'm getting like 5 followers a day and they're all bots.
Oh, really?
It's just, yeah.
Huh. Well, at any rate, I'm still there. So if anybody wants to talk to Ben or Kermit, you can shoot me a message and I'll make sure to pass it on. And if you hate Twitter and you hate websites and you hate Patreon and all that junk, you can just send me an email. isekaisenseisama@gmail.com. But you can also listen to this podcast on YouTube in high quality stereo sound. And our YouTube channel is That Time I Got Reincarnated as an Anime Podcaster. We're also on Facebook. You can search for that as well. That Time I Got Reincarnated in the Same World as an Anime Podcaster. And if anyone has a suggestion on how to shorten our name, we are open to suggestions. I like our name, but I do agree that it is very long and unwieldy, and having to say it over and over again gets a little annoying.
Yeah, we probably, that is a problem we probably should have foreseen.
I think it's worth it for the comedy.
For the comedy.
But yeah, please rate us on your podcast platform of choice. Or all of them, for that matter. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Good Pods, wherever. And on all of them. Go on all of them. Download all of our episodes. Rate all of the episodes. Please. And as always, if you can't get enough of Ben talking about reading things, you can always check out Words About Books.
You can.
Especially if you like Norse stuff.
Yep, we got a Norse one. We got Agatha Christie coming out soon.
Agatha Christie, that was the one from Patreon, right?
Yep.
So as always, thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed it.
And remember, if the manhwa ever stops grabbing you right away, maybe it's time for a tolerance break.
I was thinking recently, we get stuff wrong on the podcast like all the time as far as like names of things. And I was thinking like, I want to get our audience to like enough people that someone goes back and clips all of the wrong names that we say to make like a supercut.
The whole background of the story, like the cultural background, I mean, is just a hodgepodge of various Asian cultures.
I actually have a note about that. This is one of the first times I've ever taken notes while reading something. But when I started getting into this, there were a couple of things where I was like, I should probably write that down so I remember. And one of the things that I wrote down is an exact quote from one of the first chapters. It might have been in the first chapter. And I quote, "Historical research has been purposefully avoided as a result."
Yeah, they didn't want to have too close of a parallel to any one Asian culture. It was an interesting note. I remember that one because it stuck out to me as like, the exact opposite of what you would want to do.
It's funny though, because in the actual story, there is a point where a character is explaining how the game and the story was like originally concocted, and very clearly pointed out that this is based on Chinese history.
Oh, yeah.
And that the Chinese history of emperors and concubines and stuff is very different from the Korean history of emperors and concubines.
No, I knew like the whole having this concubine village or mini city where only the emperor, the concubines, his guards, and the eunuchs are allowed. That's right out of Chinese history. Mm-hmm. Of course, everybody has Korean names, but yeah, it was interesting where they're like, it's that one where it's like any resemblance to persons living or dead is purely coincidental.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes that's true. And sometimes you're watching Law and Order and it's very clear they're talking about Michael Jackson this week, but
I remember that episode.
Yeah. They don't want to get sued. So, yeah. And I think that's what this is. It's like, I don't want to do any research, but I'm vaguely aware that the Chinese emperor had this concubine set up. Yeah. And, yeah, just at the risk of being culturally insensitive, it's made up. It's all fiction. I love how every male protagonist in these has the same like military dress formals.
Yeah. But, well, it's supposed to be like that Europe, that sort of early mid-century European royalty thing.
They're very kind to the early mid-century European royalty because they yeah. do not look like this. I can tell you that.
Right. It's yeah. It's you can tell it's fantasy.
Yeah.
You ever seen King Charles of Spain? Yeah.